Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Raid Lavery, editor of Irish Country Living and Irish Country Magazine, The Farmer's Journal, joins us once again. Good afternoon, Raid.
Good afternoon.
Weather is rotten. I haven't said that. It's not bad today, but yeah, August has been fairly rotten.
You see the colour of the sky out there? It's absolutely grey. Now, the sun is shining over in the other corner of it. It's why we never stop talking about the weather in this country. And mind you, if you were to believe the weather forecast a lot of the time, you wouldn't go outside the
this
door.
This is true.
You'd be missing a lot.
You know, I can make the sun shine by wearing a coat. If I wear a jacket, I can make it rain.
Yeah, well, I was off for 2 days last week, Friday and Saturday, and I had boots, wellies, sandals, high heels in the car because you just didn't know what kind of weather was going to come up, you know. And as it turned out, we didn't get a smidgen of rain and we were on the west coast. We were over in Clare, which is a fabulous county and everybody should go visit.
Yes, particularly anyway, the Burren. Well, yeah, that you've been raving about.
I'm a huge fan of the Burren. And, you know, you go to places all over the world and there's nothing absolutely like it. I was down there a year and a half ago in April and, you know, it was just coming into bloom at the time and I thought it was fabulous then. So I always wanted to see it at another time of the year. And mother of God, you couldn't put your foot down for walking on flowers. Hare's bells, they're lovely little blue, like little bell-shaped flowers. Bird's foot trifle, the Avons. And it's stuff that you find, you know, the stuff from the Antarctic and the Mediterranean growing within a handspan of each other. Like, it is just extraordinary. And a good guide brings it to life. You know, there's no point going out walking for yourself with a guidebook. Get a guide to come and tell you the story. And, you know, it's one of the few places in the world where usually cattle and livestock that graze mountains graze high in the summer. They go up the mountains and they come down in the winter. But in the Burren, they come down in the summer and they graze high in the winter because, you know, the ground is warm, the stone is warm, it's limestone, it's dry because all the water runs through it and there's just plenty of grasses up there. They won a big EU ecology award there a couple of weeks back. And, you know, the work they're doing is fantastic. But saying that, the population is so much, I mean, we're talking about the curlews maybe in a minute and how they're declining, but the population around the Burren is declining dramatically as well, the human population. And so you're getting the return of holly and willow and hazel and even headers and, you know, and white thorn and black thorn. And in the long term, they're really bad for the Burren because, you know, they'll grow up, they'll cover that ground and you won't let room for all of this other stuff to come through. But I mean, the flora and fauna is one thing, but the history of the place and the you know, just everything about it.
It is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. Yeah. Great.
So back to the wetness.
Yeah, well, back to the way now. I mean, they wouldn't have to worry too much about this down in the Burren because the ground is as dry as a bone. But outside in places all around the country at the moment, ground has got into pretty rough conditions because of the torrential rain. Now, you know, okay, on average, it mightn't be raining all the time, but when it's raining very heavily. And you've got all the livestock are out and they're walking around and there's nothing as nice. Now, I took a photograph at home one morning early of every single sheep in the field sitting down, chewing the cud, happy out in the middle of the field. You won't see them doing that when it's raining. I mean, they'll be standing around miserable and they'll be going to the side wherever there's a bit of protection from the weather, if there's trees or, you know, a ditch or something like that. And they'll be walking around and up and down the field. Now, you know, as the fella says, when it's raining and the ground gets wet, animals have five mouths. They have a mouth and they have 4 feet that go into the ground and really, really mess it up. And so if you're in that situation, you need to do something about it. And people who are looking out in feeds of cattle now as they're driving around the countryside, they think, God, and the farmer grand and looky, look at them all there doing their own thing. Well, they are in their backsides doing their own thing. There's a hell of a lot of work around organising it. Because first of all, say they're in a 10-acre field. Well, they'll march up and down that 10-acre field and they'll destroy the whole lot of it. Whereas if you give them 2 acres at a time, you get it grazed off, you move them on. They're happier when they're eating fresh grass. Because you can imagine if you've got a 10-acre field and 50 cattle in it, they're going to mess it up. They're not going to like what they have to eat then because it's going to be kind of soil and everything in it. So give them the 2 acre spot, move them on then as quickly as you can to the next 2 acres. So give them, when they're satisfied, they're not going to be moving around as much. They're not going to be doing as much damage. Another thing you can start doing is if you've got a laneway or a roadway or a hardcore area, like maybe the yard of a shed, and you put some meal in there in trucks, that, you know, it'll encourage them to come into the yard. They'll graze maybe for 3 hours during the day, but then they'll come back into the yard, and that's where they might lie down because it's a nice dry surface, or it's at least it's not saturated surface. So you also have to, one of the options that people can do now is put livestock into sheds. And particularly with young stock, you have to be shocking careful because of the potential of pneumonia and stuff like that happening. So once they go into sheds, you need them, you need to really keep a good eye on them. You shouldn't have them in very densely, you know, not too big a number. Because, you know, if the air gets anyway, you know, stale, they could end up with pneumonia, and that's a problem. You know, feeding meals is an option. Lessening the amount of ground that they're on, giving the meal out in fields, but making sure that you have a truck that you can keep moving. Because if you put a truck out and you put 20 cattle standing around it, I mean, really and truly, they'll be in a mud bat before you know where you are. They'll make an absolute mess of the place.
Yeah,
I remember doing it with sheep and, you know, not moving the trucks on and having galoshes on me and literally going up to my knees in muck, because, you know, the water gathers and it just becomes a whole mess. So to keep the trucks moved, keep the cattle, keep the livestock moved into new paddocks every day, if possible. Give them some meal and give them maybe some dry food such as silage or hay to help them be nice and content.
But would farmers be doing this as often as not in August anyway?
No, not in a good month.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do a thing in the month of July. You know, the cattle, all you had to do was move the cattle from one field to the other and just look out at them and even stand on the gate and count them because they're all so happy and satisfied.
It's
like ourselves. Yeah. You know, you know the way if you've got people going for a walk on a nice summer day and they have their jumper wrapped around their hips and they're out in the short sleeves and they're moving. And then you have them, you know, with the head down and the boots on and the wet gear on and, a cap on their heads. And they're trying to avoid the weather. It's the very same thing. Animals don't like the weather no more than humans do. Like I know at home when we open the shed in the winter, we don't put the sheep in physically put them in one day.
They're running in.
Yeah. They open the gates and in they come and they are so delighted to get in out of it. And most animals are the very same, you know, they really like the comfort.
Say you have a bad June or July, how long does it take for it to recover?
The objective is that the less, if you can get through, you know, you might only have to do this for a couple of days because when the wind blows out there now and the sun comes out, you've still got long hours of sunshine. You've got great drying, so it can actually dry off a paddock very quickly. And one of the things about like moving the cattle so often is that you're going out and you're walking the ground where they are and you can assess the trouble. But if you really let a place go bad, you'd end up having to maybe harrow it to flatten it again and put some grass seed on it to let the grass grow again. So you're trying to avoid that happening, really.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah. Right.
And the other thing is water trucks aren't as essential because if the grass is really wet, it's very wet grass. The content is very wet as well. But that's not the proper word now. I can't think of the proper word. But it's not dry matter. It's much more wet matter.
Yeah.
So it's not as it's like if you were living on a whole load of fruit all the time. The water trucks moving them and all isn't as important. But just keep the cattle moving, keep the livestock moving, and limit the damage that's been done.
Right, the Impossible Burger. What's that?
Yeah, this is it's a company that was founded by a professor out in America in 2011, and the objective of it was to go off and try and find ways of replacing meat with vegetables, and they came up with this thing called the Impossible Burger, which seems it's made, would you believe it, from wheat, potatoes, and what's the third ingredient? Wheat, potatoes, and coconut oil. That's right, that binds it together, and it's also got this soy project, which is legmo. Globin, and it gives it, like when you see anything with globin, I think you kind of think blood, but it gives hemoglobin, it that kind of hemoglobin, exactly the same, something similar now. Leishmanglobin is what it's called. And it gives the burger this kind of reddish tinge. So it's for sale in all places in restaurants in Texas. Can you imagine the capital of beef grown in America? But anyway, it's the Impossible Burger. And the thing that's kind of putting it in the news a small bit is because Bill Gates and a couple of other investors have put $75 million behind it to develop more products of a similar vein. Now, their claim is that making burgers from plants, and it's possibly true, instead of cattle, uses up only 5% of the land, 25% of the water and 12.5% of the greenhouse emissions. Now, mind you, the seaweed might get rid of the greenhouse emissions for us when it comes to livestock.
Yes.
But, I mean, it has to be good news for vegetable growers and potato growers, because we're not eating anything like as much potatoes as we used to. I was looking at photographs of it and it does look pretty, much like a burger. There you go, you can see it there.
Okay, and, all right. It does look like a burger. It's too. Now, does it taste like a burger?
Well, that's it. I can imagine it's kind of tastes like a bit like a potato roasty or something like that.
Yeah.
But then, I don't eat too much in the line of burgers, but still, I like a homemade burger. And but this one looks very much like an underdone one. And the kind that you would not be recommended to give to your friends or family.
Yeah.
But it's probably okay in the vegetable world, but certainly not in the meat world.
Yeah. And but the fact that there's so much money is being put behind this kind of product,
that might have an
effect upon American agriculture.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And it's for sale in San Francisco, for New York, Los Angeles, big cities in America now. And seemingly is going down well. Mm. But $75 million from Bill Gates. He's also promoting, I understand, insect food, insects as protein. So what he's trying to find is alternatives to animal protein. We need protein to survive. And, insects are seemingly a big new area as well that he's also investing in.
Yeah, we've done pieces on that.
Yeah, no.
There's parts of the world where people routinely eat insects and it's no biggie.
Absolutely, sure. They don't do it on Celebrity Big Brother the whole time. Whatever it is. Get me out of here, the African, the desert thing. They're not poisonous. It's just over the horror of eating them.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just... Sharon the long-haired sheep.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is another one. This is kind of, your August fun stories. And Sharon is certainly one of them. This all started down in New Zealand. And there was a farmer and he discovered that he had this lamb which had straight wool. And they're known as geeps. They're kind of crossed between a goat and a sheep. Mm. And the straight wool, anyway, the animal is inclined not to be well and weak and, very rare, usually dies after birth. But this one, it turned out to be a full sheep, and it was mutant, where it actually produced this long, lustrous wool and silky and shiny. And she survived the winter and they bred her with a merino ram, and she was Marilyn and she produced Sharon. And Sharon happens to be able to have had the genetics of the merino sheep, good and strong, but also kept her mother's wool, which is really fine, silky and long. Now, it's lustrous is what it is. So scientists are absolutely amazed that they've got her. And she's living in 5-star luxury down in somewhere in New Zealand, as they're examining what has made her hair like this. Now, I didn't realise it. Human hair, it's straight hair, is much rougher and coarser than curly hair.
And I did not know that either.
No, I didn't know that either. I always thought curly hair was actually coarser. But this sheep's wool is way finer than the curliest human hair. And one of the reasons they're so interested in it is that sheep hair is a lot more like human hair than most other animals. I mean, say we're a lot, the way they do stuff with mice and then they try it out in humans.
Mm.
Well, there's no point trying out hair stuff on mice because their hair is totally different to ours.
And, vision of a mouse with an afro.
Yeah, and the structure of hair, human hair, is actually much more complicated, it seems, than silk or cotton, which are also natural occurring. So are you hoping to find from this mutant sheep, what is it that causes this beautiful, long, lustrous hair? Now, if Sharon wasn't being minded like a 5-star diva, she'd probably be dead, because the wool is no use to it isn't any use to kind of keep her warm in the winter time. It gets matted. Any of them that kind of reached any sort of maturity ended up dying very quickly because their health wasn't good. So she's been treated very well. And what they're hoping to do is by examining her wool and the structure of it, that it's going to help in forensics to identify hair on, you know, crime sites.
Mm.
It's also going to help, you know, hair care products people figure out what makes her hair frizzy when it rains or when it gets damp. You know, like my hair goes up in a ball when
this is blow dried
stuff.
Yeah.
But what makes your hair get frizzy, you know, when it gets damp? If the, you know, if whatever, L'Oreal or someone discovered that, they'd certainly be delighted. So this is all what Sharon is actually about at the moment, figuring out why she has this long, lustrous, silky hair. They cut it very regularly so that it doesn't get matted.
Mm.
And I don't know whether
might there be a commercial aspect to this? Could they breed more Sharons and shear them? This is one of the objectives as well.
Because in the past, you know, 50 years ago, and certainly 100 years ago, and if you look at 500 years ago, the cathedrals of England were built on the wool trade. The wealth of England was built on the wool trade. But when the advent of synthetics came around, wool is literally, you can't even get enough out of it from the price of the shearing. So if you were able to produce a wool on sheep that was lustrous and silky and finer than the finest merino wool, I mean, you've absolutely got really valuable sheep. So that's one of the plans as well, to look at down the line at how that can be done. But in the meantime, they're checking their mind in her and hopefully breeding from her, and hopefully that her genes will come true in the next generation.
Mairead, thanks a million for going into us. Mairead Lavery there from the Farmers Journal. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big cheque for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.